Tune into Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Welcome to the Dolcezza Sherber Experience. We are live from the Line Hotel in Washington, D.C. I am your host, Violeta Edelman. I'm here with my co-host and partner in crime,
Rob Duncan.
We're gelato makers in Washington, D.C. We have 9 retail locations in wholesale. And today we are talking to graffiti artist Kelly Tolls. There's a good chance that if you have been to Washington, D.C., you've seen his murals. His art is a combination of pop art and graffiti, and is plastered across the city on buildings, walls, and restaurants.
And restaurant trucks.
In fact, I was going to say, we at Dolcezza have collaborated with Kelly in several locations. Kelly painted our delivery truck and a shipping container that serves as a gelato pop-up that we have at the Hershon Smithsonian Museum. So, hi, Kelly. How are you today? It's good to have you.
I am amazing. How are you?
We're very good.
Welcome, Kelly.
So I was reading about you, Kelly. I was doing my research.
Oh, no.
And I read that you did high school here in Washington, D.C. in the 90s. Is that when you started playing with aerosol cans?
I was in PG County in Maryland when I went to high school.
Close enough.
Very close, yeah. But that led me into the path of Washington, D.C., which was, you know, one of the greatest things that ever happened to me, probably. Yeah, it came up from, like, you know, dysfunctional home, and then that's what got me into graffiti. I really don't know how I got through it, because it was like, I was horrible at graffiti, like just bad. And that's one of those things that it's funny, because like from my background, it came from an aspect of doing, you know, you do that when you were a little kid coming up at my age, you copied album covers, which pretty much don't exist anymore. Or you, like, you know, cartoons that you were seeing, and you took those things out and regurgitated it that way. So I kind of just when I did graffiti and stuff like that, I always had those elements in the background.
Were you a troublemaker, or did you have encounters with the law in which you were illegally doing graffiti art on the streets?
Graffiti is still, was much more back then, completely on the fringes, outlaw, illegal. You get locked up and arrested for that, and still can.
Yeah, lucky I never got arrested. I'm very
You were smart enough.
I don't know if
I wouldn't keep talking on that thread. Something happens weird with language when you say it's one way.
Yeah, no, I had a couple people I went out with, but the thing is that, like, the occupation of getting interested in graffiti and art and things of that nature kept me preoccupied from, like, I was bad. Like, I did drugs and like really stupid shit in my sense. But what saved me was that realm of graffiti and art and things like that. And, like, these days I just call myself an artist, because, like, the actual art form of graffiti is, like, the writing of a name or a moniker and putting that up.
True.
Yeah. So, like,
you have transcended that.
Yeah.
You're not tagging your name on the streets anymore.
No.
No. He's not going to publicly announce.
No, I'm hopefully I'm better off that I'm married now and I have a son, so I don't have time to spend in jail and, like, think about why did I do that, and, like, you know, it's those elements that are nice that I don't have to do that anymore.
For sure.
Yeah.
So you study fine arts, you went to the University of Maryland, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I read that you had a teacher that said that your art was cute but will never amount to a career.
Yeah.
Was that what doesn't kill you make you stronger?
Have you gone back and knocked on his door or her door?
Yeah, no, it was a funny circumstance, because, like, in college, you know, every college student goes through these steps of, like, if you're an art student, you go to college, you pretty much, like, you don't know what you're doing, so you emulate your idols. So, you know, you're Jackson Pollock one day, you're Keith Haring another day, you're Chuck Close another day. But, like, really, it took some couple of circumstances for me to kind of revert back to aerosol, where I always play with it and stuff like that, but I never I never had it as a focus. So at one point I went on tour with bands and stuff like that and supported them or did things for them and helped them out. But I was out of college for like a year and a half. But when I came back, my professors were all pretty pissed at me because I just like outed. And then because I was like doing well and I was interacting and I was like TA and all this other stuff. And then when I came back, it was just like, you fucked up. So we're not going to favor you or anything like that. Like, sort yourself out and like just hopefully you'll graduate. So like basically I just reverted back to graffiti. So all the paintings I did for my like kind of final senior show thing were just pretty much cans on canvas. And like, yeah, one of my professors was like, definitely. He was like, it was at the element where graffiti was still kind of, it had already come up and there was things, there was like Shepherd Fairey was already out and like Barry McGee and people like that. But it wasn't like exploding. Like, these artists weren't Keith Haring exploding. These artists weren't Basquiat exploding. They were just like, they were still coming from tagging backgrounds to turning it into an art form. So when it happened, he was like, yeah, it's cute, but it won't support you in real life. You won't make money. And that always stuck with me forever and ever and ever and ever.
It's like motivation.
Yeah.
To prove it wrong.
Haters. Gotta love them. Gotta love them.
Keep me moving.
Yeah, because it's like, it's one of those elements that's funny because when professors are there, they're there to exchange knowledge and help you along. And at some point after you realize when you grow up or you graduate or you even when you become a parent, like I had that realization when I became a parent, like my son was born and it was like a couple months after my son had been born. I was like, oh shit, my parents are just two jackoffs that had a kid. Oh, that puts a lot of things into perspective for me because it's like sometimes you idolize too many things.
That's a process. If you're really going through the whole process of individuation, becoming, and who are you, that's a repetitive thing that happens over and over and over. And I think at the end, all idols should be abandoned completely, because you find out really it's you, it's not them, what you're looking for.
Right. And influence is huge. I think influence is a great thing, and you have to separate the two things and the two areas of idols and influence and those avenues. And it's really, really awesome that people can be like, oh, this person's a brilliant chef, but they're a total asshole.
Yeah.
You know, their cooking is amazing because it tastes a certain way and it explodes in flavor in your mouth and they get rave reviews, but they're a total alcoholic and they hate their life and they have like so much shit going on.
And you know, with that right there too, I think a lot of people have problems with that, where it's like all of a sudden then that person, because they're an asshole or they're not good at home or whatever, then they discount everything. But I think it's like within that, when you go and know a person, we are very complicated and complex. And so maybe that person that's an asshole and terrible at home with the family and all that, but they're brilliant cooks. Right. Okay, so then just learn from them what they cook.
Right.
And then not so much with how they handle the family. And don't just write them off and completely discount them. Just know the person or the people, what they're good at, what they're not good at, and then take what you want from it.
Yeah.
As opposed to completely writing it off, which I think so many people, if one thing pops up in their profile of being shady or not responsible, they'll completely write it off, which you can lose a lot of value from that.
Yeah. And it's a lot of things also when artists like, you're stuck in your own head for most of your career anyways, because you're sitting in front of a canvas, much like any chef or anybody else. People sit in front of their computer. But artists, like, most of the time, we don't have other people around. Like, we're sitting in a room by ourselves, like, contemplating how much we hate blue or, like, some other shit like that. It's, like, really, it's really fun fundamentally to think about it. Like, oh, there's an artist. He's really, really into his shit. But, like, it's almost, like, funny because it's, like, you're so into your shit.
You know, I mean, with you saying that, the being by yourself and that process and thinking about blue or whatever, for you, what do you have a process of, like, where you go for your ideas or where mostly ideas come from? What is
right
the process?
Now I'm sure it's evolving. So where are you getting your ideas now these days?
Is there, like, do you have to go out in a vision quest by yourself, sit in a hole for 4 days and then you see the painting that you're gonna do? What's the story? That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean,
try it.
The problem with that avenue is I wish I could do that. Like, I'm not Van Gogh-ish where, like, I get all fucked up and, like, amazing shit comes out. It's actually worse for me. Like, if I got drunk, like, my paintings turned to shit, utter horrible. So, like, anytime there, it's funny because anytime there's an event or somebody's like live painting or whatever, someone's like, oh, you want a beer? And I'm just like, no, this will go south real quick.
Well, it's good to know thyself too. Yeah. You know, it's like,
well,
it's,
you're known for large murals. I mean, how long does that take?
Get on the scaffolding when you got like six beers in you. Yeah. Could go south quick.
No, it's a different, like, it's fun because like doing murals and painting like actual canvases and stuff like that, like they're two different beasts, but it's fun, the translation, because you can actually take a painting that you've done and translate it into a mural. But like, yeah, no, there's especially running powwow and like all these other things, like you have to be an example. Like,
tell
you,
us what powwow is and what's your involvement with powwow.
So I direct an international mural festival in DC called Powwow DC. Our mother festival that founded it is basically Powwow Hawaii, and they started around 10 years ago by a gentleman named Jasper Wong. And so what has happened is that it's branched out through basically the world to Taipei. We have a festival in Japan. We have a festival that's kicking off in Rotterdam soon. We have San Jose, Long Beach, like literally all over the world. We've done stuff in Israel and Jordan. They went and helped paint at a school in Nepal. And like, it's amazing because like we practice what we preach. Like, we're here to beautify the community. Like, that's the general goal of powwow. That whether it comes with music or support from doing art school or classes or just taking people on tours of the murals and explaining how they're done and how we're doing this and that and the other, and translate it into community. That's a big thing for us.
So in practice, when you did powwow in DC in 2016 was when you started doing it here.
Mm-hmm.
How was the experience that people would go and paint live, and then there was some educational aspect to it?
Right. So for the one in Hawaii, they'll do up to 100 artists at one time. So everyone like goes to Hawaii and I'll give the general thing of how it came to be is that I actually brought Jasper Wong to DC to collaborate on a mural together on a 7-story building, an old CIA building down at the yards. And it was fun and amazing, and we did it, but they came back to it. We evolved into a friendship, then basically it evolved into me directing the DC powwow. But that being said, like, you go to powwow and you go to Hawaii, and it is like, it's like what you think it is. You're going to paradise, you know, like you go to paradise and you're with like 100 other artists, and like you're there having this unreal experience of painting what you want to paint. Cause that's basically the deal. Like, you can't
but
tell
there are
the
certain
artists.
Rules, right?
No violence, no sex, no politics. I mean, okay. Those are general rules of like, you want to beautify the community. It's a general sense. You don't play with that.
Hey, I get the no violence, no politics. What's the no sex part about?
Well, I mean, like, believe me.
He doesn't
me,
like that. But,
Can you have
sex after?
Well, no. No scaffolding.
Personal relations between other people is fine, but visually putting it on a building. Like, because the thing is like, you have to have that thing about community. If you're,
oh, wait, you're meaning like no painting of scenes of sex?
Yeah, talking about themes,
all the sex
my dear.
You want.
I know where your head's at, though.
Oh, okay, damn.
It's a boy, okay. After all.
I was up on the scaffolding at night, looking out over the ocean, like, wait, why can't we do this?
We're in paradise.
Yeah, it's probably been done. I don't doubt that. It's just our general rules, like, visually putting up art. Beyond that, you can't tell the artist what to do. Even the sponsors and all this other stuff, like when we get walls and things of that nature, we explain to them the whole curriculum of it, and like being like, they're giving up their time from their family, from their friends, from their work, their loved ones, to come and help beautify our community. So like, on that tip, like, you can't tell them what to do. If you hate the color blue, sucks to be you, because like, they're gonna come and do what they
blueify everything
pretty much.
Yeah, so it's like more, I guess it's more reachable to where people won't get turned off if it's like a strong, violent, sexual or political message. So it kind of keeps it for everybody.
It should, and like, that's the whole goal of it, is this like to bring that life and vibrancy, like, of people. I like, even doing a roster, I have to be a curator. I have to figure it out, but like, I want to bring my idols and the people that I, not idols, but like, in that sense of that, people that I really respect and love to see their work in my city, because like, we're not New York, we're not LA, we're not any of the cities, and that's not disrespectful to them. It's just saying that we don't have to play this scenario like everyone else does, and we have the ability to do it in a proper way where it's like, we support the community and do it in this certain aspect. So yeah.
So right. You talk about beautifying community, supporting the community. It seems like this is important to you.
Yeah.
This idea of just not being out for yourself. And so talk to me about that.
Well, I mean, it's kind of the sense of like, I'm an artist. So I've always been in that realm of solo dolo, like doing things for myself. And like, then you have family, and then you work on that and you build on that relationship, and then you have community. And being in the DC community, being a creative, a lot of conversations happen about, oh, DC creative, DC this, DC that, and that DC doesn't have a fundamental giant creative fan base community of where everybody's exploding with love and hugging each other and everything like that. And it doesn't have to be that. But the thing is that supporting it and coming up with it and making sure that we can build on it is super important, because for me, I would not be here without my community. I would not be able to even direct a festival. I would not be able to have an art career, because if I'm not supported by community, they're not gonna do shit for you. They're not gonna purchase paintings. You're an asshole, you know, fuck you, there, it's gone.
Have you seen that community, like the DC art community, have you seen it change, or how have you seen it change in the last decade, just the last 10 years?
I think it blossomed, and you blossom with it, and we blossom with it. And, and I think the food and the art is very, it has similar paths.
It's intrinsic. Because you need to eat to create, you know, like, but creating food is creating as well. So like, it's amazing, because like blank slate, like a lot of DC has flipped over in the last 10-15 years. I mean, like massive amounts, and it's still flipping over. The next 10-15 years is going to be crazy. I'm like, everybody's like focusing on certain aspects of like, oh, rent's going to be insane, or this or that, or where are all these people going to live? And like, if you're so focused on those aspects, you're not going to be able to hone in on what you truly want to do. And that's what I find is a real problematic thing on a lot of people's creative plates, is that they spread their focus so wide that if you don't just narrow in, if you don't just sit there and say, hey, I'm going to just make gelato really fucking well, then you're going to have a big problem.
100%. That was always for the 14 years. It was always said the same thing, especially with all the opportunities that come to you. And we always said, look, it's really hard to do one thing really good all the time. If you do that 2, 3, 4, 5, then it just gets much more difficult. To do one thing consistently really good, that's already a life's work. And so to spread that out to multiple things just gets that much harder to kind of focus and concentrate on one thing.
But there is also something we always say, that, you know, you can't build a brand without a good product. And I think people tend to think that, you know, if you have the marketing around, you can be successful. But if you don't have something real at the core, then you have nothing. And I see that with artists nowadays, you know, with Instagram and, you know, this instant gratification of social media. People think that if they have 1 million followers, that's it. But there's so much hard work behind, you know, what needs to happen.
Yeah. It's the hardest thing to do is it's to be a chef, to be an artist, to do all this stuff is to have the rudimentary skills of what you're supposed to be doing. Now, saying rudimentary skills, like saying, like, I know how to turn red and blue into purple. Like, that's a rudimentary skill, right? But it's evolved so much these days that when I started doing graffiti and stuff like that, it was just like, there was no internet. And it sounds really old and hokey pokey to say, but like, if you took that shit out of your lives, how are you going to document your stuff? How are you going to get it exposed? Like, what are you going to do? And like, that's the root from where I came from. It's just put in work, put in work, put in work, and just keep going. And yeah, there. I love Instagram. It's visual. I'm a visual person. I love that aspect of it. But like, yeah, there is that balance of where you have to have those rudimentary skills. And to be an artist these days, you have to learn how to do business. You have to learn how to do social media. You have to learn how to do all these things. Even if you're a graffiti guy and you want to be big or whatever. And it's a weird thing to say that, because you come from that, you know, the culture.
Because there's a romanticism about the artist. Mm-hmm. That you are, you know, on the margins.
Anti-establishment, and not selling into the market.
And you don't have the 9-to-5 job. But it takes a lot of focus, a lot of perseverance. I mean, you need to hustle. You need to, for us, it's very much, you know, it's hustle, it's faith in yourself, and it's being resilient.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's the priority. And it's like, I always have been, and still am, just anti the market, the establishment, or try and at least have that position where you're not just a mindless consumer, obviously. But at the same time, now with the tools that be, as far as the digital tools that we all have as of less than 10 years ago, it's like I see myself coming into, okay, you know what, we have focus first foremost, most importantly, on the product itself, the quality itself. Now with the tools in place, as opposed to being anti these tools, how do we maximize those tools for us, for our well-being and for our success? So
you literally need a lesson in every one of these areas, and it's like so complicated and hard, and like to manage yourself as an artist, or even to have someone manage you, or this and that, and then to trust that person, to trust your
trust
an accountant or whoever or whatever. And there's a big difference between when you start a career and you start getting better at what you do and people recognize it. A big difference is between cockiness and confidence.
100%.
Because if you're cocky, it's going to show, and it's going to kill you and drown you in like a heartbeat. When you have confidence and you believe in what you're doing and you have that passion, like there's a huge difference between I believe in what I do and being able to just talk to someone, you know, someone appreciating you and like supporting you and supporting like the community supports you. Like always be humble and always come back and try to give tenfold back to it.
And I think that teacher telling you that you were not going to make it, I think that those situations, failure, those help, you know, with building that confidence that is not cogniz. For us, at least, I think for Rob and I, failure has always been a way of learning about yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, it can be, right? For some people, failure ruins it all because they take that. Like,
but we all fail all the time.
Right. Life is one long string of failures that you, if you look back upon it, then you see, as long as you see some improvement and learning from those failures, that's all that matters. There actually, failure is a wrong word for it.
I think it's experiment.
Yeah.
Like you could say, oh, I failed an experiment, but if you're experimenting with something and it doesn't work out, then you actually tried something. And the thing is that you learn from that.
Right.
I never call it a failure. I just call it an experiment. I had an experiment with a bologna and peanut butter sandwich, and it did not work out.
Like, so you don't eat it again.
Yeah.
Thank you for the lesson.
Exactly. It's like those avenues. Like,
we had that conversation a couple of days ago. I tend to be harder on myself, and I was telling Rob, like, we failed at this. And he was like, no, we didn't know it was an experience we went through, and this is what we learned.
Yeah.
And I was like, thank you so much for bringing that perspective.
Well, the key is if you then repeat that over and over, that's where the problem comes from.
Right.
If you learn and don't repeat that and evolve, then that's a good thing. But it's just the fact of it, failure, mistake, experiment, that's the same thing. Yeah. It all is what we as individuals do with that. Just that, then that's all of life right there.
Absolutely. There's an artist that we had last year, or this past year at Pow Wow. His name's Real C. He's based out of Berlin. And he is the sweetest, most loosey-goosey person I've ever met in my entire life. He was so relaxed, and it was amazing. But like the end of the festival, it was all done. Everybody, like for Powwow, it's like summer camp. It's really amazing. Everybody goes in, they put in a lot of hard work, and then everybody high-fives each other at the end. But then everybody gets bombed after they all leave, or when it's leaving time or whatever. And he was like, no, don't get bombed. He's like, no, it happened. He's like, this happened. This was an amazing thing that I'm going to cherish forever. He's like, I'm going to take this and move forward and be super positive. And like, don't worry, I'll see you again. But if I don't even see you again, it happened. I met you. And like, that's my, like, that was another shining moment of like, for me curating and putting on this festival, and even me being an artist and stuff like that. Like, I had that beautiful epiphany from somebody like that I was working with. And you just brought that up. And I've carried that with me. I'm like, like that bologna and peanut butter sandwich happened.
Exactly. It happened. And it's a beautiful moment.
Yeah.
It happened that we're talking to Kelly Tolls. He's an artist in Washington, D.C. And we're going to take a short break. You're listening to the Altoza Sherbert Experience. We'll be right back. It's a Sherbert Experience. This is Violeta, your host, and we're live from the Line Hotel in Washington, D.C. Today we have Kelly Tolls with us. He's a local artist, and we are talking about all kinds of things. But I wanted to ask you, your characters, and this might not be, I know your style evolves, but I think they have a childlike aspect to them. So what lenses are you looking through when painting? Well, is there like an inner child that you go back to a lot?
Yeah, I'm so immature. It's unbelievable. No, it's actually, it's really funny. It's like a lot of it, I always reflect on how people do that, how they focus and how what they take in and how they put it out and like what their influence is. And I can directly correlate where my influences pretty much came from. And it was, I was born in the US, but I lived in Alice Springs, Australia for most of my childhood, like elementary school. And like Alice Springs is like in the dead center of the desert. Like there's literally shit there. Like literally I had kangaroos as pets. Like,
Crocodrilo Dundee. What was that movie?
Yeah, Crocodile
Dundee. That one, I'm sorry. That's my Argentine.
And like Aborigines out there and like the dreamland. Like,
not even lying. I actually had a kangaroo that was in one of the, his name was Paul Hogan, or his name's Paul Hogan. Like I had a kangaroo that was in a commercial with him. Like that's how like straight up like in the desert
we were. Wait, Paul Hogan was Crocodile Dundee, right?
Yeah. So like yeah, straight up like
that's so
yeah, it's
that's
it,
not a knife.
No, yeah, it was a wild experience because like I mean it's boring for a kid because you live in the desert and like whatever, but like you figure out ways to entertain yourself. But like one of my sources of entertainment was obviously like television and cartoons, and like all we had back then was literally BBC One. So BBC One, like what they were playing back then for us in the desert was like literally like Voltron, Astro Boy, The Young Ones, The Goodies, like Monty Python. So it was like British dry humor, like I don't mean to call it dry, but you know, and like dark, deep, like humor, and then like Japanese anime that's been dubbed like what stuff. So like the that is a direct correlation because everyone's like, oh, your stuff looks very like Asian, Japanese, childish, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, I know. Like it's directly from that. It's directly from my childhood because like I took those things in, and then when I came back to the US, it's like kids were like, G.I. Joe, and I'm like, what is that?
Boring American shit.
You got a kangaroo? I know how to take care of that.
So we see some similarities. I mean, Rob has two big passions. One is skateboarding and one is growing cannabis. Mm. And we've seen some similarities with graffiti in the sense that all these three things are becoming more and more mainstream. Mm-hmm. And they are legitimized, they are assimilated by the status quo. And that has positive and negative connotations. So how do you live this transition from, you know, from when you were a teenager and you were doing aerosol painting illegally to being in galleries and being, and now developers paying you to pay to paint in their properties?
Right. I mean, realistically, the weirdest way to look at it, but I don't know another word, I have to figure it out, is you have to be selfish. You have to, like, in that, you know, humble, you know,
in a healthy sense, in a healthy sense, this is your boundary.
Because you grow up when you get married, you grow up when you have a kid, like, especially when you have a child, like, that changed my world completely, because, like...
Talk to me about that, because you talk a lot about the son of... the son... the birth of your son. How I think that was a very important moment to you.
Yeah, it was. It's one of those things where, like, when coming from nothing, like coming from a dysfunctional home, and me growing my career, I didn't have anything. Like, I came from no money, nothing, and then just having that confidence to believe in myself, and like having confidence from my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time. Like, we've been together for almost 20 years, and like, it means so much to have a support system. And like coming from a dysfunctional home, I know what it's like to not have a support system. And so as soon as my son or my wife was pregnant, I knew that I wasn't going to be like my father. I basically changed a lot of things in my life, but I'd already quit drugs by that point. I'd already like made mental
boring
but I fully support like cannabis. I fully support those avenues.
Those are plants too.
Yeah, right.
I'm kidding.
I believe
when we met, we had 4 years of just not doing anything.
Very similar process.
We needed to root ourselves.
There's moments and transitions and
I mean we can have the talk about cannabis being better than alcohol all day long. There's
refined sugar, tobacco,
most importantly is what works for you and what you need, you know, what's your
which
you
has found, everything to do your about your experiences and where you come from, you know, that's the individual.
And the thing that support system, and then knowing that when my son was born and still like doing things like bartending and walking dogs and things like that and doing things I needed to survive and make money, it got to the point where when he was about to be born, I was getting more and more able to slowly survive off my art. And when it got to that point, when as soon as he was born, I had done a couple gallery shows and solo shows, and it was great. But like I had one that was really good, my first one. My second one, it like dropped like something in my soul that just like it didn't work. Like it wasn't working. Like it was a failed
experiment.
It was a failed experiment. it was a body of my work, and it was something that I knew I could have done better. And there were things that were doing it in my life that affected me that made me not work as hard. So as soon as my son was born, I hadn't done a solo show in like 6 years. So I knew as soon as he was born, I knew what the show was going to be about. I knew how many pieces I was going to make. He made me focus. And like, I'm forever grateful for that. And he was only an infant. And they're like, it's an amazing thing where you sit there and you build on that support system and you work harder every day to make sure that the relationships you're in with yourself, with your wife, with your family, with your community are that of giving back and being positive to you. So you're only going to get as much back as you give into it.
He sounds super introspective in all of this. And that's where I think that's where it all comes from. As far as long as in your life and everything that you go through and everything that you were given, your experiences and looking at it and have that feedback upon where you're going in the future. That's the most important part of all of life, is to make sure that everything that you go through, you're learning from that and becoming a better person.
Yeah.
And your community is becoming also better from your own process. And that's everything.
Yeah.
And you're talking about children. And I think that, and I think I heard this somewhere, but it resonated with me, that we need children more than they need us. And, you know, we think we have this role of we, the parents, we are the authority, and they are learning from us. But really, we're learning from them. And the
as
magic,
long as we allow
ourselves that. To be open enough to the magic openness. That comes from these beings that are still not indoctrinated, and they're still, you know, in their own terms.
Yeah.
And so I imagine
they're wide open with no lingual structures or politics or religion or gender or sex or any of that. They're wide open. So as it depends on the degree of openness that we are.
Right.
We can learn so much from all of our children, or not. Or we can just dictate everything that we've been told and push them into that to, you know, and continue to damage generation after generation.
And it's this aspect that you're talking about. It's like the thing is that as much as you're gaining from them, you exude confidence, positivity, and like kindness and things of that nature. They send it back
100%.
And it's, you know, it's I tread on the people terms hippie and like all these other things, and like even coming from graffiti, there's a very big connotation of graffiti about thug life and like being rough as shit and fuck you and blah,
from
blah,
the
blah.
Street
and it's fine. Like that's how I came up, that's how I learned, and like things of that nature. And it's a fine line between confidence and determination and being a complete asshole and a dickhead, and like,
so always
like trying to fight everyone. Because the thing is like when you turn around, there's a difference between fighting for what you believe in a manner that will benefit everyone, and then fighting just to fight. It's self-destructive.
And it's always, when you get up there, it's always so close to each other, you know. That madness of an artist can flop and become very self-destructive,
right?
Or it can be used to express beautiful inner workings of yourself and become art.
And I've never once thought it was, and this is not condoning the illegal act of vandalism, but coming from that background, it's such a beautiful expression, and it's such a way, it's unbridled, and it's very amazing. So being able to do that with the festival and help some artists like be able to show a side of them that they're not able to show sometimes because of, you know.
And I wonder, all those artists that you run with at Pow Wow, probably most of them, it's like there is something about coming from the days of outlaw and illegal and on the fringes. The thing about that is that you love it so much, your art, your cannabis, your skateboarding, that even though you could get popped and go to jail and all that, you still do it. You know, and that's a filter that was there,
right,
and to a certain extent still is, but less so, that would, like, the people who remain are really into it. And that was, like, something that I always found that I resonated with everybody in there. And I just wonder, like, now that it's more mainstream, you have more corporations getting involved in the Cannabis X Games and Olympics or skateboarding now. And all that
Cannabis
stuff.
X Games? Are you serious?
No. the skateboarding
X Games.
And that would be interesting, X Games and cannabis. But it's just like it's more accepted. So now you have people coming to it from other motivations as far as there's a lot of money to be made in the cannabis industry and all that.
Right.
Where before, it was there because the people loved it, you know, and they would risk losing shit or getting arrested or falling flat on your face down 10 stairs and stuff. Right. But you still did it because you loved it.
Well, I'm going to say one thing. The Powwow Festival, if it was for money, I would say something like that. I don't make money. Like, if I made money, if I can go green in my budget at the end of the day, thank God. But, like, it's definitely not a money making avenue.
Yeah.
And what about what you were talking to me about being selfish, and I cut you and I asked about your son, and we were talking about painting, you know, in those properties of the developers that before were kicking you out.
Oh, right. Yeah. I mean,
tell me more about that. What is this selfish, healthy, selfish motivation?
Right. No, I mean, I think it's that thing of where you have. It's where someone looks at you in a certain way, right? Like, they view you as this on social media or this and that and the other. Like I said to you guys when I just saw you today, like, most people don't even know I'm a guy until they meet me in face to face. They're like, oh.
Kelly.
Okay. Kelly. Yeah.
He has a penis.
Thank God. It's funny because, like, people, I've been invited to all female graffiti festivals before or mural festivals or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, could have its advantages, right?
Yeah, no, I said thank you. I'd love to be a part and just let it see how long it plays out until they do their homework. But yeah, it's that aspect of where if someone commissions you or you go to paint a wall or this and that, like, there's a difference between coming in and doing your job and getting told they hate the color blue and that, and being selfish and believing in yourself of that you can lead them down an avenue and down the path that you feel more passionate about and making it work. And there's that fine line of being able to do business speak and, like, talk, because it's amazing how many people that if you talk to them and you've never talked to them before and you walk into a business meeting or a gallery or this and that and the other, if you know what you're talking about and you know your numbers and you're confident, you're going to be able to succeed 10 times more because people won't take you for a novice. They won't take you for an amateur. And it's not that you can be young or old or whatever. If there's old people I know that are so amateur, it's not even funny.
Know your shit.
Yeah,
I'm know not, your shit. And then you, if you know it and you believe in it, if you believe in it, then you can sell, convince, whatever it
then
is.
Then you own others. It.
Yeah. Right. There's something about that goes deep.
Yeah, and it's that art. Art. Even graffiti. Wait,
know graffiti. Your shit comes from give a shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, graffiti and all the start of that, it's a very selfish thing. You're writing your name everywhere. It's that's the whole sole purpose of it. And, like, it's a beautiful thing if, like, you like that stuff and you come at that aspect of it. But, like, it's the same thing if you look at it in, like, Louis Vuitton. Like, they're putting their name everywhere. It's the same thing
and
for
just
a fashion
now, design. Especially, man, it's like the power of brand is so hardcore now. It's all branding now. There is the power of it is full force. You know, did you ever have a conflict of that concept of selfishness?
No.
That's good.
No, I don't. Because the thing
that's something that a lot of people have problems with as far as, like, I don't want to be selfish and this and that. And I think it's a misunderstanding of what that means.
It's how you build yourself. You know, selfishness is how you build yourself, your body is a temple, things of that nature. But it's how you build yourself. And, like, if you can accept having a communication with, say, I get approached by a brand and they say, we would really love to do a campaign with you. Okay, cool. You want to do a campaign? Well, we were thinking about doing, like, little jelly bean characters. I'm like, no, that's like, well, why don't, and then that's how you be selfish and you bring your knowledge, your passion and your thing to the stage and be like, I would really love to like do this. This would be a fantastic idea. Sometimes you have to meet 50-50, but the thing is like, it's whether you believe that you've met that 50-50 line is worth your time or not. If you think that you're able to build on that brand and build on the thing and make sure that your purpose and your passion is out there the way it should be and properly.
It's the whole art of like collaborating and working with others.
Super hard.
And there's always when you have a relationship with another individual, mm-hmm. you know, or you work or design something, it's like finding the, and it's different every time, but finding that way where you don't feel like you've sold out your vision, but maybe you have the input from the other, and so it evolves into something else, and you at least walk away from it feeling satisfied from it.
And you talk about collaborating, and you do that a lot. I mean, that's a big part of who you are, and you do that a lot in the restaurant world over and over. You painted the interior of Graffiato, Mike's restaurant.
I said from Graffiato to graffiti to Graffiato.
Yeah,
do you have any comments?
But they just filed bankruptcy today, so we.
Well, they took my stuff down a while ago, actually.
They took your stuff.
Interesting. It's okay. But that doesn't. There's too many people that are so attached to that idea of when you paint something or this and that and the other, where somebody takes it down, like it's an insult or this and that. They can like it and not like it, whatever. It's fine with me. But at the end of the day, am I happy with what I did? Because if you like, and especially coming from like
the world of graffiti, where you put something up and it's removed or tagged or destroyed tomorrow by the city or by the other rival.
I've had people go and put stuff on my stuff. They put dicks on my things and stuff like that. And like, I had someone hit two murals in one night, and it was amazing because I was able to go back and fix it the next day. It didn't even run for 24 hours. But the greatest thing is that I did what I'm supposed to do. I fucking laughed at it. I actually Instagrammed it, and I just compared their...
Was it the fuck Trump person?
No. I critiqued their dicks. And like, I was like, why did you do this? Because you had a perfect... They did it on one mural and then not on the other. And I was like, why didn't you just do it on this mural? It would have actually worked perfectly. But then I was like, I can't tell if this penis is circumcised or uncircumcised. The pubic hair is all wrong.
Did anybody ever respond so you know who it was?
No, haters aren't going to come out like
that. Well, I mean, Graffiato is just one example, but you have collaborated with Brewery DC Brow, with us.
Which that also came down too, right?
I've had a giant Cushy.
I remember you did Cushy back in the day with Darren.
I've done a lot, man.
Gordy Spickles.
Yeah.
Did you do... what's the first restaurant? Toki? Did you do Toki underground?
Yeah.
So... You're friends with some of the best chefs in the city, some of them working at this hotel, right?
Yeah,
so.
It's amazing to come up like that and to come up with Eric and things of that nature. And like talking earlier about going to Taipei with him and experiencing
Eric
his
Bernier
culture.
Young.
Yeah, Eric Bernier Young. And like experiencing his culture and like his country and like where, you know, it's funny where you go into a restaurant and you're in America and you're like, oh, I'm going to have a Taiwanese dinner or an Ethiopian dinner, things of that nature. And to have it is completely different than going, it's a good experience, but to go to a country with a chef and like see a specific dish and say, that chef says, this is what inspired me for this dish. And you eat it and it's like night and day. You're just like, holy shit, I'm experienced. I understand what's going on right now. And it culturally, it was like mind blowing. That was one of the most amazing experiences.
Is that the first time you went to Japan with Eric?
It was Taipei. Taiwan, but the first time I went to Japan was actually on that trip because he had 3 days of press. He was cooking at a hotel, a really nice hotel. And he had 3 days of press to do. And he's like, you guys are free for like 3 days or whatever. So me and my homie Ian, who works with me a ton, I just looked at him and I was like, yo, you want to go to Tokyo? Because it's like one of those places I've always wanted to go to.
I've always wanted to go there.
Within an hour, we had the plane trip booked the next day. Like it was like a 2.5 hour flight. We jumped over there and we spent 3 days there and exploring. And I'm going back in November, but I'm still working on my next solo show. And it has a lot to do with these people that make these certain things. They've been around for 100 years. And I'm really, really stoked to be a part of that. But like, it's a good, excuse to keep going back there.
You know,
which
that's,
people? What are you talking about?
I can't say.
These people it's who have been experiment. Around and making this thing for 100 years. Mm. Yeah.
I'll
all right.
Stay tuned. I'll tell you off air. I'll tell you off air. But it's like, yeah.
So that's what you're working on right now?
Yeah. It's like, I've been working on it for like 4 years. It's crazy. And like, the thing is, it's funny because like most of it, I haven't even built a body of work around it. It's just this concept and idea that I've been working on. I still do shows and I still do stuff. But it's just like, this is a big thing that I just want to like make right, make perfect in my idea and put all my passion into it. So like, but it's like I said, it's always a good reason to
Kelly,
keep going.
Do you know the true identity of Banksy?
No. I know people that do, which is hilarious, and they
did
say,
you know the guy like Borf from around here?
Yeah.
He did something with Banksy, right?
Yeah, they're actually, New York recently. They're actually rep by the same gallery.
Huh.
Yeah, so there's a gallery out of London that reps both of them, and they rep a bunch of people. But yeah, like that's the connection there. Huh. But I mean, that's as far as I go.
So we've been talking a lot about food and graffiti and art in general, and know yourself and you know, focus and this and that. But I have one last question for you. We're getting there. Mm-hmm. Since we've been talking about food a lot and art. Mm-hmm. Tell me your favorite place to eat in DC and your favorite place to see art in DC.
Shit. Favorite. There's so many places that are on fire right now, like in DC, which I'm so happy to say. We're actually at a point right now where we can bitch about what ramen restaurant we want to go to. Like 10 years ago, it wasn't like that. Well-deserved, Maidan. They're destroying it.
Yeah.
Absolutely destroying it.
100%.
Yeah. Oh my God. I am foolish enough that I have yet to eat here at Spoken English.
Oh, you have to.
I know.
Blood cake.
Yeah, I know. I'm gonna,
chicken heart.
I'm going to get out there and tell Eric that I haven't done
duck.
It. Yeah. What are some of the other? We go all the time to Izakaya Seki.
Love it.
Yeah. Hiroshi, man.
They're
and
so
Suzuka.
Good. Oh, they're
amazing.
So good. Yeah, we were literally there 2 nights ago, probably.
Yeah.
Seeing art? Where do you go to see art here? Because there's nothing around, right?
Yeah. I hate to say
so
that.
There's so much.
There's, the thing is that they're like, it, only time I'm really actually seeing other art is when like the festival goes on or something like that. I try to go see art in other cities, but like I'm held up in the studio.
Yeah, make it. As opposed to consume it, right?
I work 12, 14-hour days, and, like, it's that soul thing. Like, we work... Me and my wife work so much. Like, if you guys know, like, you 6 days a week. We have one day off for family.
Yeah. Balance, but, man. It's maddening, no?
Yeah. But it's that self-discipline.
Yeah.
If you don't do it, no one else is going to do it for you.
Yeah.
Like, no one's going to hold your hand and be like, you know, I mean, Virginia will hold my hand every once in a while and be like, it's okay. But she's not going to do my work.
Yeah,
she's not going to paint my murals, and like it's one of those things. If you don't have that self control and self determination of being like, I don't even know the last time I went to a brunch. I don't even know what fucking happy hour is. Like that. Like my wife and I are stoked if we get to go to dinner one time, and then we're all of a sudden we stumble into a happy hour. We're just like, oh shit, we're
the same way. We
glass
got
glass of wine for
$2. Three kids, you know. It's like we used to be out and on the beat, and everything was opening up, and we would be in it and eating it, and now it's so few and far between that we get to go out. And
I would rather do that though. I love getting older. I'm not even gonna lie.
I'm a grandma, man.
Yeah,
I love it.
I like marinating. Like the thing is, it's like
The scene to me is not attractive at all.
Uh-huh.
I don't like the scene. Honestly,
I mean, you do that thing. You go buck wild when you're younger and things of that nature. But like, I love the aspect, especially being an artist. It's where I keep getting to go, and like people talk about retirement. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like in my job profession, there is no retirement. There's just do create create, make
because you're doing your own thing, and you're doing what you really love to do. And I think that most people who sit in a cubicle and hate what they do, that's the retirement is like, so today the suffering and the misery of today is a little less because I can think about the moment when I retire and don't do something that I hate.
And I feel I've been in that situation. Like I worked for Whole Foods for like 10 years being a designer, and it was like, you know, a little office to myself, like
a good experiment to know that's not what you want to do.
Yeah. But it helped me a lot with design, like that I had to teach myself and things of that nature. But then like also I did like real estate advertising, which was like, what an experiment that was.
I couldn't see that. I can't see that.
No. It's like one of those little situations where it's like, make the blue bluer. And you're like, what are you talking about?
Hey, other than yourself and your own work, who's a couple of your favorite artists out there right now? Now or before?
Oh, my God. Right now?
Off the top of your head.
I don't know. That's why Instagram I have. Like, there's like a bajillion artists out there.
I always said, some of your characters remind me a little bit of the guys from Brazil, Osso Meos.
I get that. Those.
I love your shit and I love their shit. I mean, they're very
different. I'll take that as a
compliment. I love the character. Mm-hmm. I love when graffiti goes from the obvious tagging,
right,
but then amazing letters, but then the art and the characters that are in there, and especially like the characters that are actually doing something in your own work and your painting.
Yeah.
Like on the back of our truck. They're busting into the back of our truck and the gelato's falling out of it. It's amazing.
I'll take that compliment any day. I love the comparison. I personally don't see it. Like I can whatever. But the thing is that to get compared to them,
yeah,
Jesus Christ. Like
they're awesome.
Yeah, they're amazing. If I could pull them for the festival, I would
break dance in the 80s. I would
cry tears of joy. Yeah. But it's people like people out in New York, Fail. They're phenomenal. There's an artist, Revoke. He's been destroying it with like a simple thing where he his whole life was graffiti, and then he came up with these like elements of basically turning like the old Spirograph and things like that into new pieces that took a different language. And like it's such an amazing conversation. Like there's a lot of artists these days that are just like taking themselves and turning it on its head, and that's really refreshing because like, you know, you'll always have someone come out and be a hater and like be like, oh fuck, it's a Spirograph, and you're just like, dude, like literally no one fucking else has done that, like no one else did it, like he actually just did it and like enjoying himself being passionate and everything like that. So
when people are so good at something, they make it look easy.
Yeah,
but it's not easy.
No,
and that's the trick.
Yeah. But then the repercussions are funny because like they're gonna get 80-90% praise, and then they're gonna get like a giant amount of like fuck you
always.
But the thing is, it's like it's always the fuck yous that make you work harder.
I
love that shit.
It's
like you always, there's no such thing as not being negative. There's a negative aspect in this world, but it's just like how you cook.
Well, it's a choice.
Yeah, how you cook with it,
it's a choice. It's like the choice to be happy. It is a choice.
Yeah,
when whatever happens, you can choose to take that negatively and get, fester on that, or mm-hmm. take it positively. It's our own individual choices that we make.
Yeah.
Every day.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Kelly. It was so good talking to you.
Thanks, Kelly, for coming in, man.
I don't believe.
We're done.
Yeah, no, we can to be continued.
Yeah, we've been talking for an hour almost, so.
No,
yeah.
I had a great time. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah. See you around and your walls around and trucks around.
Yeah. We got to talk about trucks, though.
Yeah, you've been tagged a little bit on our truck. We need to...
Haters.
Yeah.
Bye, guys. Mm. Be kind to one another, those haters out there. Yeah. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C., Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.